Top of Mind. I'm Julie Rose. We are here daily with in-depth conversations about what's happening in your world. If it's top of mind, we will talk about it. Our relationship to time in America is complicated. We say time is money, and we punish people by forcing them to spend time locked up behind bars. We brag about how many hours we work, and we scoff at those lazy Europeans who put in only 35 hours a week. Yet we also spend massive amounts of money and time on leisure activities. Southern Methodist University history professor Alexis McCrossin studies the role of time in American life, and she joins me now by phone with some thoughts on this. Welcome, Professor McCrossin.
Hi, Julie. Thank you.
You've written an entire book about clocks and timekeeping, and your research actually took you into the National Archives, where you learned, or at least you share in your work, that the government has actually shaped our views pretty importantly on and how we spend our time, what we think is productive, what we consider idleness, right? Give us an example of something that we do because the government wants it that way.
Well, we could think, for instance, until very recently about working hours. It used to be that the government regulated fairly vigorously the hours of the day in which people could work, the hours in which radio or television broadcast. It used to be that the government also regulated, we can think a lot about Sunday laws, for instance, regulated which days of the week people should work and which days they shouldn't, and what they should do when they weren't working.
Something really subtle but fascinating was all of the photos that you were able to dig up from, I guess it was from the Farm Service Administration, right? That period,
yes,
where
yes.
Dorothea Lange and other great photographers were commissioned to go out and show the reality of American life during the Great Depression. And that what changed about the way we spend time and our ideas about idleness as a result of those images?
Well, the Great Depression posed a pretty serious problem for the federal government, but particularly once FDR becomes president and becomes devoted to a program of relief, reform, and he needed to, and his administration needed to persuade the American people to support extensive public spending on various sorts of programs that would put men and in some cases women back to work. In order to do this, they needed to create a kind of sympathetic portrait of unemployed Americans. This had been Americans hadn't been particularly sympathetic toward the unemployed before, thinking it was their own fault, that they were lazy, that they were wasting time. And yet in the 1930s, with this massive economic depression, the tables turn a bit, and the portraits that the FSA photographers, Dorothea Lange, Arthur Rothstein, and many others began to send back to Washington, D.C., and then were published in various national newspapers and magazines, particularly Life magazine, were sympathetic portraits of people who were idle, that is, who weren't working, but who were shown as not wasting time, but as, in essence, having their time wasted because they were unable to work because of the depression.
And then the war comes along, and suddenly didn't the idea of how appropriate it was to be idle or to do leisure activities, that changed in America?
Oh, it reverted back to the pre-Depression period, in which any kind of loafing was depicted as immoral, as deviant, as dissipating, as traitorous. And these were not just in the FSA photos that showed various groups gambling, for instance, but you would also see these in the kinds of posters that were produced during World War II to encourage people to keep up that kind of relentless amount of work that needed to be done on the home front in order to supply all of the munitions and supplies to fight this world war.
Was any kind of leisure considered appropriate during that time period?
Well, during World War II, some leisure came to be considered appropriate that had previously been sort of looked at askance. So, for instance, and this mainly focuses in on Sunday, about which I wrote a book before the clock book, and in terms of Sunday, it for decades and decades, it was felt that any kind of recreation on Sunday was interfering with the true work of the Sabbath, whether a Protestant Sabbath or a Catholic Sabbath, but with the idea that the day should be devoted to rest and prayer and worship. But during the World War II period, new forms of recreation, or we could say recreation, began to be accepted on Sunday because of the sense that people, after working so hard those other 6 days, needed a break. And so we see a lot of photographs, for instance, of people bicycling, of public swimming pools that are packed, joyous pictures of a kind of celebratory outdoors, healthy recreation. And this really is a big turning point in American culture. Certainly there were people riding bicycles on Sundays before World War II, but it was not a celebrated sort of activity in the way that World War II opens up the doors for these new forms of, they're not new forms of recreation, but for recreation, to legitimize recreation.
Speaking of Sunday, Alexis McCrossin, as you mentioned in that whole book you wrote about Sunday practices and time, the way we spend time, I'm curious how much America's religious background, you know, our puritanical mm-hmm. roots, mm-hmm. guides or brought us to this point where we as an American culture are very insistent upon punctuality and keeping time and marking time and being productive.
Absolutely. The Protestant heritage of this country in particular the Puritan heritage, but the Anglican heritage is very strong as well from the colonial period, placed a strong emphasis on redeeming the time and on making every minute count. And if it was not going to count toward redemption and the after death, it should count toward a kind of productivity in fields or in factories or in the home, whatever one's calling was, whether as a mother, as a farm laborer, as a merchant, one should be as productive as possible with that time that one is given. And this kind of confluence of both, so we have Protestantism, we have this Protestant ethic, right, of the work ethic, but we also then have capitalism, which is at the very heart of the founding of America as well. And these come together very powerfully so that through the 19th century and into the 20th century, the emphasis in American culture has always been on work and on efficiency, on working not only hard, but efficiently and effectively and productively. And this has made us very uncomfortable with our leisure time, because we're not exactly sure as a culture, as a nation, what leisure is good for. What exactly is the product that it's that leisure is going to produce, other than ephemeral joy or pleasure or perhaps a hangover, depending on how one uses one's leisure?
Do you mean to say that we are apologetic?
Yes.
About our leisure time, because we
yes.
certainly do it. I mean, we spend a lot of money and time at, I think you could consider going to sporting events a leisure activity,
right,
or participating in outdoor recreation leisure, or binge watching entire series of television shows on TV or on Netflix. All of that, like, we're pretty good at leisure in America.
We're awesome at leisure, and we're spending a lot of money on it. And I think that there's been, I still think that we're apologetic about it, to use your phrase, in that particularly when you think about the ways that people discuss their children's leisure, they are often very focused on their children's play having some sort of payoff. So there's a huge market, for instance, for educational toys. Or there's an emphasis when we talk about youth sports and recreations on the way that, on the character building, on the fact that it's good for their bodies, it's good for their spirit, right? It's going to build resilience. So even in terms of the kinds of leisure activities that we focus on, we take great pains to find something that's worthwhile about it. But I do think we're in a turning point in that we do, as unapologetically, right, watch hours and hours of TV, spend all day Sunday watching NFL football, devote ourselves to our college sports with great enthusiasm. So in that sense, I think that there's a little bit more unrestrained participation and pleasure in our leisure activities.
Alexis McCrossin, there's one other aspect I want to touch on quickly with you that about maybe we can call it the propaganda of idleness in America. And that is the extent to which racism and racial stereotypes have shaped views of idleness in America. Maybe you could briefly explain how you think what we consider idle today actually has been tinged by racism.
This is an extraordinarily complicated topic, and it, in many ways, it takes us back to the arguments that were made in favor of slavery in the antebellum period and to the controversies that ensued after emancipation. Many of the apologists for slavery argued that the system of slavery was necessary because due to their racial characteristics, enslaved peoples would not work unless they were forced to. And that their tendency racially was toward laziness and toward waste. And these arguments were also made about Mexicans, about Asians, about any non-white European. So these are racially tinged arguments about the propensity and the proclivity to work. And those arguments rise directly out of self-interest in terms of generating various systems of coerced labor, whether it's slavery or sharecropping or what have you. And they hinge very much on depicting African-Americans, Mexican-Americans, the foreign-born as lazy and as idle. And I'm not I can't reflect on those arguments or how those arguments inform our present day preoccupations with idleness, except for maybe to draw our attention to debates over welfare, which have often invoked the kind of idle taker, often with a kind of racist or racialized tinge.
Alexis McCrossin, thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, too. I enjoyed it. Thank
Alexis
you.
Alexis McCrossin is a professor of U.S. social and cultural history at Southern Methodist University. Her books include Marking Modern Times, A History of Clocks, Watches, and Other Timekeepers in American Life. This is Top of Mind on BYU Radio.